Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Dirty Fling Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Mr. Terence Corrigan. Today we're going to be discussing revelations and accusations about the relationship between Herman Chava and Julius Malema in a forthcoming book about Julius Malema. We're also going to be talking a little bit about Zama-Zamas versus Recyclers in a turf war on East Rand, and we're going to be talking about slightly embarrassing comment made by Cyril Ramaphosa to ANC Council. So there is a book coming out soon, or may just be out. I'm not actually sure if it's out yet. But anyway, this book is looking into Malema's career and his sort of background, and it has, as is usual for sort of big investigative books like this, the book is called Malema Power, Money, Power, and Patronage. And as is usual for books like this, they release sort of snippets to the media to kind of gin up enthusiasm for the book. And the snippet that was in the Daily Maverick is quite something to read. So it starts off, this is chapter 23. It's called Mashaba Comes to the Party. There's on the morning of 27 September 2017, Herman Mashaba sent a mayoral committee report to his EFF allies, including Julius Malema and Floyd Chivambu, saying that he was finalizing the appointment process of a particular guy, a particular person called Lerato Sechedi, to the city power, to senior leadership in city power. The story here goes on to say that Mashaba apparently allegedly did this in order to get the EFF support on council, in passing his institutional review, which was part of sort of Mashaba's policy planks to kind of reform the city of Joburg. City power officials say that Sechedi was widely viewed as purely an EFF appointment, and the EFF ended up supporting Mashaba's policy proposals in council then. The EFF previously had walked out rather than vote for them, but then proceeded to vote for them. I was actually a councillor at the time, so I sort of vaguely remember some of this. I didn't know quite a lot of these details. Anyway, so it then turns out that later there was some contracts that came under extreme amounts of suspicion, which the new head, Lerato Sechedi, did apparently did not investigate. A judge slamming City Power for conduct. When it was when evidence support that these tenders were likely irregular, specifically Sechedi was criticized by the judge for the judgment, saying his failure to investigate the alleged fraud was either cavalier or blazoned disregard for the order to do so, or trepidation at what a proper investigation might reveal. Sechedi was then already on special leave and was removed, I think, from the entity in 2022. But the book here alleges that Malema had benefited, or at least the EFF had benefited in some way from these tenders, and that it concludes here saying Malema had already seemingly raked in the rents, an elaborate racket involving city power officials colluding with favored companies who had squeezed money out of a vital city entity, with large sums channeled back to those officials, along with a cut for Malema, their political protector. Vital to all of this was the unwitting assistance of a mayor who the EFF had not long before said they could never work with. So, a bit confusing there. I'm not sure how well I explained it, but Terence, basically, the accusation here is that Mashaba ended up becoming essentially an unwitting pawn of setting up the EFF's patronage network in the city of Johannesburg. What do you make of these allegations? And I guess this explains perhaps why the EFF started to call Mashaba our mayor at various points.
I think that, first of all, as we said before the show, if they are true, but now I see that one of the co-authors of the book is Pauli van Wyk, and I'm a great admirer of hers. I think that I believe she would have done her homework. I think the most charitable explanation is possibly that this was a guy who had entered this position being somewhat politically naive. He was also dealt a difficult hand in that. As I recall, the DA didn't have a complete majority, so he was going to have to try and
cut. Yeah, it needed the EFF to win the support. There was a coalition of a number of parties, the ACDP, the IFP, all of those kind of parties. But the EFF was necessary in order to get Mashaba elected.
Yeah, and look, I think that unfortunately the EFF, whether then Mayor Mashaba recognized it or not, represents some of the darkest impulses of South African politics. There's been questions about Mr. Malema's probity for some time, that goes all the way back to the kind of Zuma ascendancy. But there are some details there which, again, are true, but would seem to be verifiable. Sending an email to the party leader, not to their caucus leader. Confirming something suggests that there was a quid pro quo. I don't want to suggest that Mayor Mashaba was, as they say, wittingly complicit in setting up their patronage system. But I can't help thinking that it was a very, very poor judgment not to expect that something like this was going to happen. You know, I suppose one could argue in his defense that this is the sort of smutty underside of politics, and you've got to do what you've got to do. You've got to make a sacrifice here to get a gain there. This I think casts a pall over at least over his judgment.
It's kind of interesting for me because I was sort of a witness to some of this because I was a DA councillor in the caucus at the time, and I remember initially, you know, the EFF had helped elect Mashaba, but there was clearly no real alliance there. The EFF was doing this purely to humiliate the ANC, and there was this, you know, initially the EFF would just constantly play these like sort of games in council where they would walk out over everything, they would make grandstanding speeches. They would hold caucus breaks that, you know, they would get 10 minutes for a caucus break and then would hold it for 2 hours, just constantly sort of pushing the envelope and grinding the council to a halt. And I remember how furious Mashaba was, and he would speak to the DA councillors and say, you know, these guys, they're pushing up buttons, and if they're going to remove me from power, then they must remove me from power. You know, I'm not afraid of them. If we can't work with them, then, like, what's the point? And then there was suddenly a point where he sort of seemed to just change, and suddenly he kind of became very sort of standoffish towards the DA councillors, and he started meeting with all these EFF guys all the time, and he sort of started to regard his own caucus almost, in my opinion, as like a secondary sort of concern, like not particularly important. And it's clear that I don't know what exactly had happened, but the relationship seemed to have changed. And this email, I think, gives some insight perhaps into that that relationship, that at some point they came to a deal, and they became very close for the next couple of years, which is, you know, this is a big part of, I think, why Mashaba ultimately left the DA to start Action SA, because this relationship, as you can imagine, did not endear him to others in the DA. I don't know. Do you have any further thoughts?
Yeah, my only thought here is that it just underlines this idea that politics in South Africa is not for sissies. I think this is an appallingly poor a dearth of judgment. And I wonder how many now, if of course, once again, assuming that we understand a more or less full picture of what transpired, there was some sort of deal cut where the appointment of a particular official was part of it. This also seems to me to be the kind of thing that someone with a business mindset might regard as an acceptable trade-off. Business skills do not necessarily translate into political understanding. And this is something that I think a lot of people fail to understand. You can be a phenomenally successful business person, which is not that does not necessarily equip you to be a skillful politician. And maybe you thought, well, you know, I give this position, and I get my agenda going. It seems like a fair trade-off. But you know, what is behind that demand? Yeah. Well, look, you know, my understanding is that Mr. Mashaba has never been afraid of coming out, you know, with the gloves removed, and I'm sure he will hear. So perhaps we can meet in a week's time.
Yeah, I'm sure he's going to respond to this forcefully at some point. It, you know, in the sort of larger picture, this kind of speaks to an interesting era. This was kind of the sort of that period of the DA when under Musi's leadership that they ran into a lot of trouble. And this alliance with the EFF, I think, it wasn't a formal alliance. It was sort of a wink and a nudge kind of agreement. Yeah, it was weird in that there was sort of no clear agreement over what exactly was happening. It was all sort of backroom deals and vote-by-vote basis. It was kind of a supply and confidence type agreement, but much more sort of chaotic and mysterious. And I think it really did come back to hurt the DA because, you know, they ran into the reality that unless you have like-minded coalition partners, you're not going to really be able to do what you want with policy. And I think they really came up against that in Joburg.
Well, you know, on that issue, I think that it's not just about like-minded ideas, about a like-minded understanding of what of the nature of governance. In a paper that we published a year or two ago, someone referred to the DA as a sort of, as you know, a wonderful EU party. You know, it's about getting, you know, about, you know, service delivery, you know, government being an enabling environment. For the ANC, the EFF, the whole liberation movement mindset, it's something very different. It's an ideological game, and almost, and you know, very, very, very millenarian. That you know, this is we are the political that we are your salvation. And I think that you know, it's also I think unfortunately become so shot through with personal enrichment that's just, you know, kind of, you know, part of the package that you buy. Remember, it's been said for a long time, almost every major scandal that South Africa's gone through since 1994 has had to do with party funding.
Yeah. So it's going to be very interesting to see this book and the splash it makes. You know, I think Malema has been under a lot of pressure for a while now, and I'm sure this is only going to make things more uncomfortable. We shall see. I'm sure there's going to be many rejoinders and threats and legal threats to everyone involved in writing all this. So I'm sure it's going to come back into the news at some point.
If they have a copy of that email, I would say they're probably safe.
Yes, but that doesn't mean that there won't be legal threats.
I'm sure there will, and there will be a lot of name calling. That's the name of the game.
Indeed. Okay, let's move on to our next story. This is a report, I think, in the Citizen about a turf war taking place in parts of the East Rand between the plastic recyclers and the Zama Zamas, also known as the illegal miners. These plastic recyclers, they sort of go through communities in the sort of wealthier suburbs, and they basically pick up recycled material, they bundle it all together, and they then, you know, carted off by hand to recycling dumps to get money for it. These guys are pretty ubiquitous across many suburbs, particularly in Joburg, where they, you know, are involved in recycling stuff there. And they appear to have, in the East Rand, come into conflict with illegal miners. It turns out that the Walterfrieden rubbish dump in Ekurhuleni is right next to some mine shafts that are used by illegal miners to excavate. And for some reason, there is a clash over using this turf. Apparently, there have been gun battles that have broken out a number of times. There have been attempts by the plastic recyclers to, it seems, set fire to infrastructure used by the Zama Zamas. a local private security guard, guy says that the informal settlement, lovingly named Plastic City, which is not a great name for an informal settlement, says that some of these arson attacks have almost caused major fires that threaten to burn down the entire informal settlement. Terrence, this just seems to be another sort of incident of, and at least one person has been killed and one person has been wounded so far that we know of. When it comes to illegal miners, it's not always easy to tell how many people have died, because often the bodies are thrown down mine shafts. And so, you know, they're not found for a very long period of time. This just seems to be another case of the kind of disorder that seems to be creeping in to many parts of South Africa's urban environments. What do you make of this?
I think that one has to start with the realization the informal sector, be it legal or illegal, is a lot bigger than we often give it credit for. Those zummers, you know, it's not just like a guy, you know, stretching a little hole in the ground and trying to pull out what's left. There's literally kilometers of tunnels that go underground, but like, you know, the Viet Cong in the Vietnam War. Is why the cops, I reckon, will starve them out rather than then go down there after them. Now, you know, you can have whatever opinion you want on that, but that I do kind of understand the reasoning.
Much of Gauteng is covered by these vast tunnel networks, you know, because we've been mining this place for so long that you know, the miners don't even have to dig all these tunnels. There's just sort of these huge cavernous networks that they can disappear into.
And I'm sure there's some Stephen King creatures like lurking around in them too, but we can discuss that on a later episode. Then you have the pickers, whom I'm sure we are all in some measure familiar with, but they tend to be the sort of fleeting presence that comes by, greets you, maybe asks for a drink of water, and you know, carts away stuff. But they are, in a sense, the kind of lowest rung on the economic ladder, doing a job that that is very physically taxing, not particularly pleasant, and doesn't pay a huge amount. But nevertheless, you know, it's a bare bones life. Unfortunately, you know, they also come into contact with others, you know, drug addicts and whatever. I understand that there's a big conflict that goes on in the western part of town. Yeah, you know, and this being Mzansi and the Zamazamas being who they are, and often like mixed up with organized crime, sooner or later someone is going to pull a weapon. You know, this is something that is often said by people from outside South Africa visiting here. You know, we have the poverty, we have the governance dysfunction. What we don't have is the kind of just culture of violence. You know, heard this from a guy from the DRC. One big difference is we have no electricity and we have no locks on our doors. And I think what we're seeing there is very much a case of that. The people on the sort of bottom of the pyramid struggling to survive, and They do the thing that people in South Africa do, that they turn to violence.
It is unfortunately a recurring problem. And then, of course, what's kind of weird about this reporting is that, you know, there's this security consultant, Marius van der Merwe, who's mentioned in this reporting. But, you know, the police basically don't feature. And unfortunately, this just seems to be the case in so many of these issues. Either the police are under-resourced, or someone is threatened or bribed someone, or, you know, they're just not particularly interested in dealing with this issue. Unfortunately, it's probably going to result in lost lives.
Yeah, and of course, just on the policing issue, there have been credible allegations of police providing, you know, transport facilities and protection to some of the Zamazamas, probably not to the actual, less to the actual miners themselves, into the kind of criminal network. I mean, I heard a story about, you know, police car used to pick up the gold and transport it. You know, unfortunately, that's a believable story, whether in this case or not it was accurate.
Indeed. All right, let's move on to our last story, and this sort of connects a little bit to some of the conversations that we were having on the show yesterday about, you know, the ANC is doing this big push now for sort of, they say, they talk about accountability from their councillors, where President Ramaphosa and Gwede Mantashe sort of were dressing down ANC councillors, which I thought was a bit rich. It was kind of like sort of the leadership of the ANC going to a big collection of their councillors who were all gathered in FNB Stadium in Soweto. And as far as I can tell from the reporting here, basically shouting at them saying, why aren't you doing a bit better job? You guys are making us look bad. You need to be held accountable. But also at the same time saying we're not going to fire you. Ramaphosa said that people wouldn't be fired. They would just be interventions. And then he sort of gave this weird gobbledygook answer about what interventions meant. That might include firing, but probably wouldn't anyway. The embarrassing bit, though, that was just immediately picked up with glee by the DA's social media and splashed absolutely everywhere all over their social media stuff was that Ramaphosa said the following while speaking to these ANC councillors. Quote, it is painful each time when the Auditor General comes to report to cabinets and they put their report in those municipalities that do best are not ANC-controlled municipalities. And I can name it here because there's nothing wrong with competition. They are often DA-controlled municipalities. He urged ANC councillors to, quote, go and see what Cape Town is doing, saying that he felt there was nothing wrong with seeing what was being done in other municipalities. Just another aside before you get your thoughts on that, Terence. At the same meeting, ANC National Chair Gwede Mantashe was sort of shouting at the councillors for lack of performance capacity, and some of the councillors were getting irritated by this, so they started singing to kind of disrupt his speech. Mantashe said, quote, I know there's a lot of singing, councillors, but there are no councils. You all sing well, but capacity? Dololo. comrades who are councillors, leaders of the ANC who are making noise when a meeting is underway, what kind of leadership is that? Ideally, when there is a dome like this full of councillors, we should be saying that is the biggest resource the ANC has. The resource that fills this dome is the resource of the ANC. That is what makes the difference between a collapsing ANC and a renewed ANC. So, you know, I'm not sure if it's a great management strategy to gather all of your underlings together and then just blame them for all the problems, which seems to be what the stick here was. But
there are so many things that you can comment on. The first, I think, most obvious is that, you know, for all this talk of getting things right, you know, the president could fruitfully start with his own cabinet and with some of the ahem, ladies and gentlemen that he has appointed to elevated office. I think the Chief Justice remarked that it was particularly painful to have to swear some of these people in, knowing what they had got up to. So let's just say rules for thee and not for me. Secondly, I think that in practical terms, you know, he's just got the relationship wrong. It's a feature of local government since 1994, or you know, since the first local government elections, I think it was 1995, that the latitude and ability of councillors to influence these things has progressively been stripped away. You know, there was a time 25 years ago when if you had a power outage, you phoned your councillor and he or she would then like get in touch with the officials. Now this is in Joburg. Now, you know, you have the call center. So all the councillor can do is just phone the call center, which you might as well do yourself. The problem is not necessarily that you have that you have shoddy political leadership, although, you know, I'm sure that plays a role, or shoddy representation. It's that you have a shoddy administration. Something else that the president said during these remarks, or during I don't think it was in this event, but a couple of days previously, is that this time, guys, we pinky promised double dog dare serious about it. We're going to be super serious. That there is going to be consequence management for all deployees, whether you are deployed to a political or an administrative office. Now, there's your problem. You shouldn't be deploying politically to an administrative office. that's how you end up with these big tenders that, you know, get siphoned off and you pay $30 for a bottle of water. Part of me feels quite sorry for the, you know, for those councillors dealing with an impossible situation without a good story to tell, and essentially they just become the sort of face of the failure. That being said, it is also a dynamic in the ANC that those councillor positions are strongly contested for, because that's a job for 4 or 5 years. So, in many respects, what you have here are professional activists who do not have anything to fall back on, and this is kind of like part of their political journey or their reward, part of the patronage system. Successful local governments, I would argue, need effectively to attract those sort of upstanding, almost busybody citizens who, you know, want to make things better. And that's just not really what we have. It's not entirely an ANC problem. You know, how many people in the DA, you know, get into a council and then start talking about going to province or going to national. The idea that you might be a sort of career politician in the local space just doesn't really form a part of our vocabulary. Parks Tower, for instance, was, I think, he was generally regarded as a fairly good mayor, even by his detractors. Now, maybe that's a low bar to jump over in Mzansi, but, you know, there it is. What happens? He loses office. He doesn't stay around to kind of lead the ANC caucus. You know, he gets transferred to something bigger and better. That's your problem right there, I think.
Yeah. Look, I certainly miss my council salary, which, wasn't kind of millionaire making, but it was better than NGO salaries. But that being said, on that point you made about sort of Ramaphosa not really seeming to know actually what councillors do, I mean, he has this line, he says, councillors must deal with problems like sewer leaks within 48 hours. Because, comrades, this is very simple. If there is a leak in your house where you live, if there's going to be a sewage leaking into your yard, as a councillor, you make sure that you attend to it in a short space of time. Well, you know, councillors provide an oversight role. They can basically shout at officials and vote in council, but they don't actually order the officials to go out and do things that they're not supposed to interfere with the running of the administration.
And still less so do they actually go and like take a spanner and go and fix that problem.
Yeah, exactly. It's just sort of confused. It's like, no, you know, they should be holding officials to account, but you can't hold officials to account as an ANC councillor because the officials are often ANC deployees. So you'd be, you know, trying to hold to account people in your own party who might outrank you in the party structures, which is awkward, to say the least.
Yeah, but you know, also, we, as you'll recall from earlier in this year, my household was cut off for 7 days over a very, very disputed bill, and which we paid the whole thing within an hour of being cut off, but we just couldn't get anyone to come and switch the thing on again. That is an administrative problem. I must say our councillor tried and was contacting people and gave me numbers to try, but ultimately, to get the guy in the van to come and do the work, that seems to be a much more difficult issue. And I suspect there's a lot of chicanery that goes on about, you know, who gets paid and how much they get paid for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Clean up all of those. All those
things. These middle intermediaries who all sort of take a slice, and you've got outside contractors performing this role, and then you've got internal stakeholders who need to set up a system that doesn't actually, you know, monitor things, but is supposed to monitor things. I mean, ideally, a city like Johannesburg, you're supposed to, the citizens are supposed to register an issue, you know, like power outage or water or a billing problem, whatever, with, you know, the call center or the website or whatever, gives them a reference number, and then that provides a sort of method to track this, the problem, and refer to it. But, you know, it's not clear that like those databases even really work. They sort of seem to exist, but you know, who has access to them? Councils don't really have access to them, at least last time I heard.
We've been unable at times to even register a complaint. And I don't mean just, you know, because the call dropped or whatever. I mean, trying to phone, emailing, and going in person.
And that's not because there isn't a way to do it. It's that these systems that are being paid for just don't work. And that's exactly as you say. This is the administration not working. So you could have, and this is a thing I think that does happen quite often, is you have these sort of activists, they come maybe from a very poor background, and they're maybe a bit naive. They get into this, you know, position for the ANC. They're really eager to, you know, sort of improve their community, and they just hit with this wall of, you know, stonewalling, preventing them from doing anything, party discipline, saying you can't criticize this, you know, not much power, and, you know, they become the scapegoats. They even become the scapegoats for national leadership, which puts them all in a stadium and tells them to be less rubbish, or maybe we'll fire you, maybe, which, yeah, no, not a great management strategy.
Yeah, well, look, put it in these terms, you know, something I've noticed again and again over the years, that when someone is running for election for the first time, there's a great deal of sort of finger in the air, nose in the air. Yeah, no, it really hasn't worked. You know, we got to, like, you know, like, I'll click my fingers and I'll make sure I'm there 24/7 and whatever. I'm saying, you have no clue what you're about to walk into. You know, I remember actually there was an independent who stood in our ward, and he was, his flyers were, you know, how disgraceful the city administration was, and he's like a successful entrepreneur, and he's got all of these like canonies who are going to like help him, and you know, he's going to sort things out, and he won't be accepting a salary because this is entirely voluntary. And I said, okay, this guy doesn't understand that actually you need some sort of structure behind you, not just your five canonies, you know, and sort of trumpeting the fact that, oh, I'm so rich and I don't need the salary, and therefore I'm not going to accept it. Yeah, you know, you're going to put the backs up again of everybody, you know, around you who actually doesn't. No, it's just I think chronic lack of understanding of how these systems, I'd like to say, work, but actually don't work.
So I encourage all of our listeners and viewers who are, you know, interested in politics and local government to just kind of read the Municipal Systems Act, stuff like that, to, you know, get a better idea of exactly how this stuff works, because we are heading towards another local government election, and it will help one to sort between the candidates who know what they're talking about and don't know what they're talking about. Anyway, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you very much for watching. We hope you found the show interesting. Have a great day, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow. Cheers. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.